It's Monday, February 9th. This is the Education Subcommittee on Education. We have a special event today, and so I thought a couple of quotes. One for sure might work with the events that are happening here. This is a quote from Annie Oakley. She said, "My mother was perfectly horrified when I began shooting and tried to keep me in school. But I would run away and go quail shooting in the woods, or trim my dress, or trim my dresses with wreaths and flowers." So we can do one or the other today. Okay.
Just so you know, I took an education.
Yes, Senator Robin,
And comment to your quote for the day. I ended up in a education trip to Germany when I was a high school principal, and with BOLI, Bureau of Labor Industry. And one of the events was to go to a Schützen club where they have their guns and take a target practice. One of the women that was on the troop was a great-great-granddaughter of Annie Oakley, and she shot really well. Just so you know, it was pretty funny because our host said, "Well, that's not fair. You guys have guns all over the place, you know, because they can't take their guns out of the Schützen club." It was an interesting dichotomy of how our places work, but she was a good shot, so there's genes there as well that seem to work.
Yeah, there's a whole list of quotes here. I'd love to read them, but we probably should do business because they're fun. Take a moment and look them up if you want to. It's real, you know, one of those silly things. Okay, Kim, I guess I need to open a public hearing here on Senate Bill 503. Mm-hmm. So done. And Kim, if you'd give us some background, and then we have two people to present.
Okay. Co-chair, members of the committee, I'll do that. On today's agenda, we have public hearings for two bills, SB 5013, which is the appropriation bill for the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists, and SB 5033, which is the appropriation bill for the Board of Psychologist Examiners. And today we have Randy Harnish, who is the lucky interim director for both of these boards, and Claire Clark from DAS, who are here to give you the overview of the two agencies. But before I hand over the presentation to the two of them, I want to give you a little bit of staffing history for the two boards. The Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists set standards for practice for licensed professional counselors and marriage and family therapists, and the Board of Psychologist Examiners licenses all persons in Oregon who engage in the practice of psychology. And during the 2011-13 biennium, the Board of Psychologist Examiners had a long vacancy in which they did not have an executive director until October 2012. They asked Becky Eklund, who was then the director for the Board of Licensed Counselors and Therapists, to serve as the interim director. And at the same time, during the 2013-15 biennium, the Department of Administrative Services and the two boards proposed using an interagency agreement in which the two boards would share some management staff. The two boards would share the executive director position and an operations and policy analyst position, and each position would spend 50% of their time with each board. Then, by November 2014, the two boards were left without an executive director again when Becky Eklund retired. In addition, the shared operations and policy analyst position was also vacant, and the investigator for the Board of Licensed Professional and Counselor Therapists was vacant, and they've been without an investigator until, Randy tells me, today is the day the new investigator started. And the two boards are now currently interviewing for a new executive director. Meanwhile, Randy Harnish, who's the executive director of the Board of Licensed Social Workers, has accepted an appointment to be the interim director for both these boards. And I think he was just appointed very, very recently. So he just jumped right in. And because of all these staffing transitions, although no final formal decisions have been made about the interagency agreement, the 2015 and 17 budget you're about to hear is assuming that the interagency agreement between the two boards will continue into the 15-17 biennium. And then once we have a more consistent staff, the director and the Department of Administrative Services will get together and make the decision more formally. So
thanks,
we'll introduce
Kim.
Randy first.
Yes, and while Randy, come on up, please. Do we have documents that we can be following today, Kim, since we're all a little rusty? Well, not all of us. Some people might be rusty on how to find everything on our...
I didn't see it earlier today when I was looking.
And then we
no attachments.
To committee meetings today.
Okay.
And then go to the education.
Yeah, I passed by that.
Oh. For some reason.
That's because I'm on a Mac instead.
The meeting materials is not showing up on you, but you can use this one.
Oh, I'll be fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. I wonder if that's the difference, because I've got them too.
That's
a Mac difference.
It's a Mac
difference. Yeah, and it's on this computer.
What can we say? Randy, are you starting or is Claire starting?
I think I'm up first.
Okay. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Chair Comp, Chairman Rowe, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Randy Harnish, and I'm, as you noted, the interim executive director for the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists. And just to put a date on it, I started November 1. So I've been kind of helping out in a very limited fashion for the past couple of months. But to be perfectly honest, I was expecting this interimness to have come and gone by the time budget hearings came about. So, but we do what we can. The Board of Licensed Counselors and Therapists is a consumer protection agency that works with clients of counselors and marriage and family therapists. The licensing structure for the Counselors and Therapists Board states that counselors and therapists cannot call themselves licensed without being licensed. You can practice counseling and therapy without a license, but you can't say that you are licensed. Obviously, that is...
I think that refers to my quote.
The rationale behind that is that the customers of counselors and therapists, if they want to avail themselves of those services and they seek out someone who has the title licensed, they'll know what they're getting. They'll know that they've met certain educational and experiential requirements. If you choose to work with someone who just calls themselves a counselor, you may not, you don't have that assurance, and you don't know exactly what you're going to get. An example, I tried to think of an example of what a marriage and family counselor might be, and a lot of us have had interactions with them. But for example, Mr. Z would be a family therapist who has a private practice, and he works with families of children who have been involved with law enforcement at some point. Kids, I have a 14-year-old. I pray to God it doesn't happen to head this direction. But assuming that he was headed down a path that looked like it was not going in a, you know, he's not going to finish high school on time, things were not headed, you know, headed well, we might seek out a family therapist to meet as a family and discuss those issues, kind of the relational counseling to help us find a path to, or find a means to get him back on that path. Let's see. Licensing boards have two main functions. They set standards and issue licenses, which ensures that the public knows what education and experience a licensed professional counselor or a licensed family, marriage and family therapist would have. And then the second function is that it gives the clients a place to go if they believe they've not received the services that they were entitled to, or if they've been treated inappropriately in any way. The Board of Licensed Counselors and Therapists has an eight-member board, that is broken down in this way with three licensed professional counselor members. So it's specified in statute that these board members have to meet these criteria. Two of them have to be licensed marriage and family therapists. One is a faculty member from a school training those individuals, and then two public members. Our boards meet monthly, and We currently have one public member position vacant. The agency staff, we have four positions with 3.5 FTE, an executive director, an investigator, an office specialist, and a halftime office specialist. And as was mentioned earlier, the executive director position and is shared with the Board of Psychologist Examiners. And as you'll see when we talk about their staffing, they have a position that they share with the counselors and therapists. The executive director position is vacant. I've been helping out as interim, and I'm very happy to report that on Friday last week, the boards met together and they offered the position to an individual who, knock on wood, will begin sometime in March. So that's for me and the board's very good news. The investigator two position has been vacant since late last summer, but we hired a gentleman and he'd actually started last week. So he's been, and he came back the second day, which is always a good sign. And so we now have the investigator position filled as well.
He found his parking spot.
He did. The office specialist too, the 1.0 position, is a fellow who's been in the job for a long time, and he's really, right now, he's our anchor. He understands the processes, and he's been doing yeoman's work to keep the board's functions moving forward. And then the halftime OS2 as well, similarly, working with licensees directly and has been, again, filling in, doing a superb job to keep the work moving forward. The Counselors and Therapists Board has two license types, a professional counselor and a marriage and family therapist. So those are two different categories within the agency. I should mention too that both of these require at least a master's degree in a mental health field. They require an internship as part of their graduate program and at least 2,000 postgraduate supervised counseling hours. So it's kind of a structured process for the intern to work with a licensee and kind of learn the ropes and be able to apply the skills that they've learned in school in an actual practice setting. Right now, our license application, initial license is $125, the initial license fee. And as this was explained to me, is the application initial license is for the intern. So when they start the process, they pay $125. Once they've completed all of their intern hours, they pay $100, and they're issued their initial license. Fingerprinting fees are $47.25, and then renewals are $125. We've seen the number of licensees just continue to grow steadily over the last several years. Right now, we are projecting about 4,200 licensees in the 15-17 biennium. And with the increased number of licensees, we have increased numbers of complaints. And so the complaints have increased from 64 in 2013 to 81 in 2014. Obviously, our goal is through education and ratcheting down our licensing requirements to see those complaint numbers drop off, but they continue to kind of creep ahead.
Co-chair?
Yes, go ahead, Mr. Chair.
So are you keeping up with your complaints, or what's the backlog for clearing these complaints?
Co-chair Monroe, when the investigator left last summer, obviously that kind of put all of the complaints into a bottleneck, and things slowed way down. With the assistance of the Department of Justice and our legal counsel, they have again done quite remarkably well in clearing those cases out. So while there is a backlog, it's not a significant backlog, and the new investigator, we believe, will be able to maintain maintain a process going forward where we don't have a lot of cases sitting, you know, in the on the desk.
Follow up,
please.
If you got a complaint today, how soon could you expect that complaint to be rectified?
Chairman Rowe, it depends entirely on the complexity of the case. If it's an application case, let me give you an example. When someone applies for licensure, they have to indicate whether or not they've had any kind of criminal history. If they do, then we turn that over to our investigator, and the investigator does a preliminary investigation. If they find that the individual had some kind of run-in with the law when they were in college, and that's still on the record, the investigation probably would be opened, resolved, and closed, and the person would continue on through the licensing process without any interruption or minimal interruption. So I would say a couple of weeks to a month. If it's a more complicated case, the investigation might take several months just to determine whether or not there is sufficient information and background to decide whether the validity and the level of how serious it is. Those cases could take up to a year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Go ahead and proceed, Randy.
All right. This slide just kind of shows the increased numbers. You know, back in 2005, they were at 2,100, and we've now officially almost doubled the number of licensees. So, and it's been a fairly just kind of regular increase over the biennia. And things that we've done to, let's see, did I skip? No, here. Things that we've done to kind of streamline our office procedures. We're in the process of implementing. We have implemented online renewals, which is an enormous time saver, both for the licensee and for our office staff. We have a flat rate agreement with the Department of Justice for legal services, which has been a godsend in allowing us to kind of regularize, if that's a good word, our legal expenses over the year. It's really, really been helpful to give the board the ability to call DOJ when they think they need help, rather than to run that question through a "can we afford it" filter. So it allows us to make that decision based on whether or not we really need the services. And both fortunately and unfortunately, they use a 3-year rolling average to determine what the flat rate is. So, you know, we go back and look at what the actual expenses would be, and then they determine our flat rate amount for the upcoming year based on actual use. So it's not entirely to the benefit of the agency, but it certainly allows us to kind of flatten out and have more consistent legal expenses rather than have those enormous dips and increases throughout the year. The board simplified reciprocity license application process, which means someone coming from another state that has a similar sort of licensing structure, they don't have to go through as many hoops to get licensed in Oregon. As much as nice as it is to call and talk to someone and get a question answered, we all know that in many cases, websites can give you the same information with much less at much less cost and much more efficiently if you have good information on the website and a workable process or a workable setting for them to access that information. So the board's continually revising its website to accomplish that. We're working with our IT contractor to implement full online licensure, both initial and renewal. So that's a goal. We're not there yet. And then obviously the partnership with the Board of Psychologist Examiners is a way to kind of take advantage of both the proximity and the similarity in the licensing structure and the kind of co-location of staff. And that's just a slide that shows the number of cases of complaints that we've seen increased from 38 in 2009 up through up to in the low 80s in the last year. And obviously the budget drivers for a little other funded agency like the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists, we're entirely a function of how many licensees we have. You know, the licensees provide the funds, they support the agency and support the work, and the number of licensees also is a function of how many complaints we get. So as we get more licensees, we get more funds, we get more cases, it increases the complexity of the work that has to be accomplished in the office. And as we all know, costs just continue to increase. It costs more to hire people. It costs more for legal services, and just general government expenses continue to move up. The Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists is proposing a fee increase to take effect next biennium. That would increase the initial license fee from $125 to $175. That's the, again, to kind of reiterate that, that's the person that's coming in who wants to set up an internship and move towards full licensure. The second increase would be the license application. That's the person who has completed that internship and is now going to get a full license, and that would increase from $100 to $125. That fee increase would allow us to fund two half FTE positions to assist with growth in licensees and complaints, and it would also allow the agency to exit the upcoming biennium with an ending balance of at least 3 months' operating expenses. And a couple of bills that we've been following very closely is Senate Bill 230 that would require the agency licensees to complete a demographic survey. Right now it's a voluntary survey. This bill would require it, make it mandatory for all licensees to complete this survey on renewal. I know that the bill has had one, I believe it's had a hearing. We've had seen one amendment. Depending on how the language of the bill is interpreted, I think it's something that we would be able to absorb within our existing budget because of the fact that we have online renewals, because with that it would allow us to kind of have someone exit our system, go fill out the survey, and then return to our system and complete the renewal process. It would take some, you know, some IT time to make that happen, but once it's in place it seems like it would fairly well, you know, kind of self-monitor and self-complete. And finally, Senate Bill 289 caught everybody's attention with the small boards and commissions sunsetting on a regular schedule. So we're obviously very interested in seeing how that bill moves through the process. And I'd be happy to take any questions.
Any questions? Co-Chair Monroe.
Okay, the fees.
Yes.
They have an application fee, basically, when they finish their internship and they get their journeyman status or whatever you call it, then they pay another fee. And is that it, or are there annual fees as well?
Then there are renewal fees after that.
Once a year or what?
It's, you know, actually, is it once a year? We're moving from once, it was once a year, but they've moved to every other year for, you know, again, for simplification in the office, we have to process half as many applications.
So two-year,
yes.
Two-year renewal fee,
yes.
And how much is that fee?
Is that
$260? Annual, that's what I
Oh, and then it would be 125 is the renewal, so it'd be 250 every other year.
Okay.
Going to 175.
Chair recognizes Senator Roblin, so it can be on the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would that be going to 175 as the recommendation, and then 320, 350?
No. Co-chairs and Senator Roblin, my understanding, and again, I have to preface everything with my understanding in this, is that the only two increases would be those initial license. Okay. The renewal fee is not going to change. Those would stay the same.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, at this time, is Claire going to give us her thoughts on this?
Can we just move the mouse so I can reach it? Does that work?
And is this going to come in the form of a recommendation, Kim, or?
No, it's just all public.
Okay.
It's all public testimony.
All public testimony. Okay, thank you.
All right. Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, members of the committee, good morning. For the record, my name is Claire Clark from the Chief Financial Office. So this morning I will give a brief presentation on the governor's budget for the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists. Oh, I may need to pull this together.
Sorry.
There we go. Okay, so the 2015-17 governor's budget addresses two emerging issues faced by the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists. First, it supports the efficient use of government resources by supporting the continued collaboration with the Board of Psychologist Examiners. And second, it ensures the board has the resources it needs to address the growing number of complaints it receives and to keep up with the growth in its investigative workload. The Board of Licensed Counselors and Therapists is situated within the public safety outcome area of the 10-year plan for Oregon. So it contributes to the public safety vision that Oregonians are safe and secure where they live, work, and play by providing consumer protections from unfair or deceptive practices in the provision of counseling and therapy services. So here you can see a brief history of the board's expenditures from the 2011-13 actuals through the 2015 governor's budget. It also provides information on the FTE of the board over time. So the increase between the 2011-2013 biennium and the 2013-15 biennium is mostly due to inflation and the addition of criminal background check limitation that the board conducts once every 5 years. So for the current biennium, the governor's budget increases by about $400,000 due to the addition of two half-time positions and additional limitation to conduct criminal background checks for the growing number of licensees. And I'd also like to point out that all of the board's expenditures are other funds. So this chart displays the revenue sources for the board over time. Again, the board receives 100% other funds revenues that are primarily generated from annual licensing and renewal fees that are charged to professional counselors and marriage and family therapists. If the board receives monies through fees or settlements, or fines or settlements, excuse me, it would appear in the fines and forfeiture category. So that category can fluctuate somewhat. The 2015-17 governor's budget, as we've mentioned, does include a $25 fee increase for license applications and initial license fees. Fees were last increased in 2002. The increase is projected to add approximately $91,000 in revenue for the 2015-17 biennium and provides the resources needed to fund the additional staff aimed at letting the board keep up with its growing workload. The governor's budget for the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists supports current services and makes investments to address increases in the board's workload. So first, the budget adds a half-time investigator position to accommodate the 60% increase in complaints that occurred over the last 10 years. The budget also adds a half-time administrative staff position to accommodate the increased workload associated with the growth in licensees. So also because the number of licensees is growing, it provides limitation to the board so that it can process the additional criminal background checks. So in addition to adjusting staffing levels to accommodate the growing workload, the governor's budget supports efficiency and the effective use of resources by supporting the continued collaboration with the Board of Psychologist Examiners. The governor's budget anticipates that the two boards will continue to share an executive director, as we've touched on already, and the operations and policy analyst position. They will then develop a plan for merging their staff and resources to be ready by the 2015-17 biennium. So to provide the boards with the flexibility they need to design this collaboration moving forward, the two new positions are included as limited duration positions. So at the end of the 2015-17 biennium, these positions will essentially fall off of their budget, and then we will make a decision about their staffing at that time. So that concludes my presentation, and I welcome any questions you might have.
Any questions? Well, I finally found part of your presentation. Claire, on your budget sheet, it has, and I know that the biggest increase is coming from more people being therapists and licensed counselors, but this budget is asking for nearly $300,000 more than the previous budget, and that's for 4 part-time people?
I'm sorry, that's for, Co-Chair Monroe, members of the committee. The governor's budget adds 2 half-time positions, so
right.
It adds a half-time
okay.
investigator and a half-time office specialist. Well, the additional increase, if I may.
Please, because I was going to say, and where's the rest of the money going?
Sure. So the $113,000 is associated with providing limitation for criminal background checks. So because the number of licensees is growing, the board will need to process more of those criminal background checks, and they collect those criminal background check fees, but the majority of that money then is transferred to the Oregon State Police,
right.
And so it's not retained by the board, but it does show up on the budget as
transfer.
Limitation.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Roblin.
Okay, so my understanding was in the initial fee and the other one, it was going to go up to 175 for the initial and to 125 or 150 for the
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, Senator Roblin, that is correct. Yeah.
So it said here a $25 increase in your presentation, but from my looks, it's a $50 increase in the initial license. Because I thought it went from 125 to 175.
I'm okay. Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, Senator Roblin. So the application fee will increase from $125 to $150.
$150, okay.
The initial license fee will increase from $100 to $125. And then the registration for interns will increase from $125 to $150.
With all $25 increases.
Correct.
Okay. I don't know where I got the $175, yeah. But I'll have to go back and look.
Any other comments? Okay, Kim, would be the presentation for Senate Bill 5013.
Right, and then we move on to the next
okay,
one.
And I don't have to gavel. And Randy, if you're ready,
okay.
Let's go to Senate Bill 5033.
All right.
If you do this interim stuff for another 6 months, you'll have it all down.
Yeah, that's the key takeaway here is negotiate very carefully. Co-chairs Comp and Monroe, members of the committee, again, my name is Randy Harnish, and I'm the acting interim executive director for the Board of Psychologist Examiners. And we're here today to present a little bit of an overview of our agency And in this case, the fact that we did the counselors and therapists presentation first and then the psychologist examiners gives us an opportunity to kind of see the difference between what is known as a title act and a practice act. In licensing, professional licensing world, a title act protects the title, which the counselors and therapists is a title act. It protects folks who are using that title. It does serve a purpose in protecting the public. Like we've said earlier, it allows the public to know who they are contracting with or who's providing their services, and it guarantees a level of expertise and education based on the use of that title. The psychologist examiners is a practice act, which means that you cannot practice psychology in Oregon without a license. So it's a stronger licensing structure than the counselors and therapists license. So in this case, again, the purpose of the board is to protect and benefit the public and promote quality within the profession of psychology. And you cannot practice as a psychologist in Oregon without a license. An example in this case would be a Dr. X, who may work at the Oregon State Hospital or at the Oregon Health Sciences University, or may have a private practice, but he deals with more complex mental health issues such as multiple personality disorder or schizophrenia, things that are a bit more complicated, more sophisticated than the family therapist and professional counselors. And as such, a psychologist requires a PhD, a doctorate of psychology. The mission, piled my stuff up here, there we are. The mission of the board is, I think we just said, to promote, preserve, and protect the public health and welfare by ensuring the ethical and legal practice of psychology. As all licensing boards, they have two functions. They set standards and they administer examinations, and they license all who practice psychology in Oregon. And the second is the enforcement or the monitoring function, and that is that they ensure that all practitioners are licensed. They give clients a place to file complaints if they are subjected to inappropriate behavior. So, I think, again, the same two functions with the difference being that psychologists cannot practice as a psychologist in Oregon without a license, which I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but that creates an entirely additional type of complaint, which is unlicensed practice. So for counselors and therapists, there's not really an unlicensed practice complaint, but there is that possibility with psychologists.
Senator Roblin.
Yeah, just so I have it clear, so in a title act, anyone could go out and put up, I'm a marriage counselor, without any background, college, whatever. It's just that they felt that they had the expertise to do it. They could hang their shingle up, and there would not be a violation of any law to do so. They can charge whatever they want. People can pay it. And if they had a complaint, they couldn't come to you because they aren't licensed. Is that correct?
Co-chair, Senator Rowland, that is correct. The limitation would be using that term licensed, or creating the perception of licensure would be pushing the envelope at that point. But no, you could open a shop without being licensed, and there would be no point of entry for the psychologist's board. Nor would clients have anywhere to go.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you. Can you explain to us how a consumer would know that subtle difference, please?
Co-chairs and Representative Taylor, the licensed counselors and therapists prominently display in their advertisements and in their offices, because they want the public to know that they are licensed, because that there is added value to that to the client. The unlicensed counselors and therapists, you know, if they are trying to describe themselves in terms of being licensed, I think that at that point the customer or the client would have the opportunity to ask to see their license. And if they don't have the license, that would answer the question. However, I understand your question. It really is up to the customer to know who they are dealing with.
Follow up?
Sure.
Thank you. So when one is doing things like paying the fee or agreeing to terms before, for lack of a better term, a therapy session were to start, something like that, is that documented for the consumer to say that are the non-licensed counselors somehow being required to inform more proactively? I just want to make certain that I understand. Are they required to say more proactively, just so you know, we're having a therapy session here, and I am not a licensed family marriage counselor?
Co-chairs and Representative Taylor, actually the converse is true. The licensed therapists would indicate in their intake forms they are licensed. And so you'd know that if you didn't see that on your intake form, I think it should raise the level of concern or the question. But because of the way the statute's written, the board does not have any authority over those who are not licensed, because it's a voluntary license.
Thank you.
All right.
Kim has just let me know that. Go ahead, Kim.
Okay, Co-Chair, members, Representative Taylor. Another distinguishing characteristic for a consumer to know is that most insurance companies will cover licensed professional counselors and therapists, but not the unlicensed ones. And so, consumers would go out of their way to look for a licensed therapist and counselor if they're using their insurance.
Thank you.
One.
Yes, Senator Roblin.
Thank you very much. So is there any agency or whatever consumer protection group that you could take a complaint to about these unlicensed ones in Oregon?
Co-chairs and Senator Roblin, not as a professional,
okay.
As a general business,
okay.
Then yes, but not professionally.
Okay,
go ahead, proceed.
Right. Board membership, again, appointed by the governor, confirmed by the Senate. We have a requirement that 6 be licensed psychologists and 3 are members of the public, which is a typical configuration for these professional regulatory boards, is to ensure that there is a public member on the board to represent those non-professional points of view. And they meet every other month, this board. Staff-wise, again, 3.5 FTE with 4 positions. They have an executive director position. In this case, the executive director is filled as an operations and policy analyst who is shared with the counselors and therapists board. So the counselors and therapists executive director is filled as an executive director and shared. The counselors and therapists executive director is filled as an operations and policy and shared back with the counselors and therapists. That mm-hmm. It makes sense to me only because I've thought about it for a while. But the psychologist examiners has one FTE program analyst, one FTE investigator, and a half-time office specialist. All of those positions are filled. And in this case, the investigator has been in the position for many years, and they are not backed up in their caseload. They are moving through them. They have similar numbers, but as is the case everywhere else, we have in increase of licensees, and the number of complaints actually have dropped off during the 13-15 biennium. Now, I can't say that that is anything other than just coincidental. It had been going up prior to that, but we'll just have to wait and see.
Well, and in all good faith, Mr. Harnish, they're all complaining about the government now.
We hear those. Let's see if I can.
And that word, the government, is a very broad term.
The Psychology Examiner's Board issues two license types, a licensed psychologist, which requires a doctorate, and they also issue a psychologist associate, which requires a master's degree. And there are very few of the master's psychologist associates issued. It's a much, much smaller number. The vast majority of the issues are the license issued are the psychologist at the doctoral level. And again, just the march upward in the numbers. And as far as this board's work to kind of streamline, they've moved from in processing continuing education requirements using an attestation and then a random audit rather than auditing or evaluating each person's continuing education requirements. They have converted from from a 1 year to a 2 year license, which levels out the. They converted to a birth month renewal schedule rather than, you know, in the previous versions, everyone's license came due on the same day of the year, which was horrible for the office staff because it was in December. It was like, you know, how much worse could you make this? And so rather than continue that, they spread the renewals out over in each individual's birth month, which spread out the workload, but it also evened out the income. So it was a win-win. They use iPads for board communications, and they also use the flat rate agreement with Department of Justice. Let's see. And they've moved to using electronic check scanning, which just speeds the process up. They are looking into options for online licensure. The psychologist examiners do not do online renewal. They would love to move to that, but it's just a factor at this point of working with their IT provider to get that functionality built into their system. Also making materials and information available on the website. And then again, partnering with the Board of Psychologist Examiners to kind of both co-locate and share resources and share expertise. This board is also a fee-based, other-funded agency whose revenues are driven entirely by numbers of licensees, and the costs increase regularly are the personnel, legal, and kind of general government expenses. Numbers of complaints continue to have been decreasing, are holding steady over the last couple of years. There was a spike in 2010 with a kind of a focused attention on unlicensed practice, but those numbers have dropped back down, and so the complaints are kind of holding steady. And this board it's kind of an unusual situation in that they have an unexpected budget surplus in this month, or in this biennium, to the extent that they've worked with DAS to implement a two-thirds fee decrease, which took effect January 1st, 2015, and will expire December 31st, 2016, which is one full renewal cycle. So every licensee will have the advantage of this one-time fee decrease to kind of refund those additional funds. And at that point, After 2016, we will hopefully have a new executive director who's been in the seat for a period of time, and will have an idea and be able to evaluate their actual staffing needs and expenses and determine where to set the fees more appropriately. I think it is safe to say that it will not be lower than this reduced fee, which is $255, but it will not be greater than $750, which is what the fee was before. It'll be somewhere in that range. Again, the two bills that we are interested in.
Just a second, Randy. Senator Roblin?
So is the $750 an annual fee? I know you've gone to paying a fee, so they would be paying the $1,500 biannually?
Co-chairs and Senator Roblin, the $750 is a biennial amount.
Okay.
So in this biennium, they'll pay $255.
Gotcha.
Chair Kahn?
Yes.
I just wanted to clarify for the when you're using the birth year, because I know some other boards and commissions have done that. Does the individual then pay a prorated fee? So, for example, if your birthday is in June but you apply in January, do you pay a prorated fee for 6 months, or how does that work?
You pay. My understanding is you pay the fee, and then your renewal comes up in your next birth month. I'm not sure if it's Honestly, I can't answer that. I could find out.
So you maybe have, if just by random luck, get 18 months for a 12-month fee.
You know, co-chairs and Representative Taylor, I'll find out, and I can send
Kim,
the LFO staff, an answer to that question, because I honestly don't know that.
Mm-hmm. That's okay.
I'm curious now that you've asked. So. And I think other than, the same bills that at this point I have caught our eye, I think that concludes my presentation.
Okay. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I thought you were napping.
No, I was just kind of curious if Randy was going to have House Bill 2044 up there that you're keeping an eye on. So I just wanted to put that on the record. It's a bill that I've got that we've been working with the board on an ongoing basis trying to come to a reasonable conclusion, and it has to do with licensure, the psychology board, and recognizing institutions of higher learning that have PhD programs in psychology that are largely online, and you know, working with the state board to recognize those programs.
Co-chairs and Representative Huffman, yes, that is. I should have had that on there. That has been a topic of conversation with the. With the Psychologist Examiners Board. So, yes, excuse my oversight.
Senator Roblin?
So, on Senate Bill 230, in the previous board, it was clear, since they do online renewals, that all the online would do is fill out a deal that would come to them. You acknowledge that they do not do online. So how do they go about doing that, and how come it wouldn't cost more money? Because somebody has to work with all the paper that's going to be coming in.
Co-chairs and Senator Roblin, my assumption at this point, and it's just an assumption, is that this would be the lever to move them towards an online renewal system. That's the path they've been moving down. I think this would accelerate their movement to that process.
And they don't anticipate that costing anything?
Not significant.
Okay.
And I think
that would be nice for us. And many of the systems that we've gone online have not been free.
Co-chairs and Senator Roblin, the good thing about this is that a lot of these little boards use the same IT provider, and he has built that functionality into other boards. So I hope I'm right, but I would like to believe that it would not be an enormous cost, and it would be basically moving an existing process that he's developed for one of the other boards to the psychologist examiners, and it would not be without cost, but it would not be building a whole system from the ground up.
Thank you.
Chair Kahn?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Just a minute. For the record, this is Representative Smith-Warner.
Thank you. And I apologize, I was testifying briefly in another committee, and so I missed part of this, but in looking through your materials, you mentioned converting LCSWs from 1 year to 2 year license, but is that something that this board also covers? Because I didn't see that anywhere else.
Yeah, co-chairs and Representative Smith Warner, I have to apologize. With three boards, you've helped me identify one I should have changed LCSW to. but in this case, the fact they have moved towards from 1 year to 2 year licenses in the psychologist examiner's board.
Oh,
as well.
So that's just a miss.
Great. That was me not reading carefully enough.
Any follow up?
I have a second. Oh, did you have a question? If I wanted to see what the criteria is for becoming a counselor for family counselor or family marriage counselor versus a general counselor, and that criteria to get that licensure, is that easily available? Because it sounds like there's some discretion used in the comments you made earlier when those licenses are issued, because people go to different types of institutions, et cetera.
Co-chairs and Representative Taylor, yes, that information would be on the website. The license application would lay out what the education requirements, what education requirements there are,
mm-hmm.
and what the distinction would be to go down one path or the other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Follow up,
please.
Thank you, Chair Kopp. I'm just wondering if you're seeing this pretty significant increase, not with the Board of Psychologists, but with the regular counselors, that. Are more folks who were previously not licensed becoming licensed, perhaps in order to have their work covered under insurance, and even if not implying that they're doing anything wrong or anything, are you seeing an increase of folks who were perhaps unlicensed before, now they're becoming licensed? And the reason I'm asking is I'm wondering if perhaps that's why we're seeing an increase in the complaints.
Co-chairs and Representative Taylor, I don't know that for a fact, but that would seem to be a reasonable conclusion. Mm-hmm. And I can go back and ask our licensing staff if they track the data to find out where their new licensees are coming from, what their background is.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can learn something that would be useful to answer your question, I can funnel that through through Kim.
Follow up. I just
yes,
want to
please.
Say you've been this such great presentations, and you've done such a nice, thorough job, and you know the answers to so many things. So I appreciate it.
Thank you, Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Following up on the same line, it is part of the conversation on the board reviewing what the criteria are for receiving a license, and do they change that on a regular basis, or is it pretty consistent? It was this level 25 years ago. It's the same education / experience that gets a license.
Co-chairs,
the counselors,
and Senator Roblin, in my brief time with with these boards, that's the educational experience is a conversation.
Okay.
Simply because degree issuing agencies, the colleges and universities, they're changing their programs regularly. So the board is looking at, has to review those programs to ensure that what they're doing now it complies with the requirements. But as far as to my knowledge, the actually changing the statutory language around the educational requirements has not been. It's not recently been changed, again, in my limited experience, but I can check that with our staff and again funnel that back through Kim.
So follow up. So going to the doctoral programs and psychologists, do they approve the program, not necessarily the courses and what they take, but the program from institutions, and those are how they do their license, as opposed to making criteria for the program itself and therefore telling the universities what kinds of things they have in it, or is it a combination of both?
You know, co-chairs and Senator Roebling, I'd be guessing if I were answered you at this point, but I can find that out.
Because then it would be interesting to see the comparison between what they do in their programs and what we do in the licensed therapists, from my perspective.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And what the programs are going to be offered by the online schools. Just to throw that in for Representative Huffman.
Okay, thank you, Randy. Great job. Claire, you want to go over your presentation, please?
Sure. Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp. For the record, my name is Claire Clark from the Chief Financial Office. So I will give another brief presentation for the governor's budget for the Board of Psychologist Examiners. Oh, and again, I forgot. Oh. Right. Okay, so the 2015-17 governor's budget for the Board of Psychologist Examiners mainly addresses two issues. It supports the efficient use of government resources through the collaboration with the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists. As was mentioned in the previous presentation, the governor's budget also addresses an unanticipated surplus in revenues and ensures the board does not continue to collect more revenue than necessary for its operations. The Board of Psychologist Examiners falls within the public safety outcome area of the 10-year plan for Oregon. Like the counselor's board, it also contributes to the public safety vision by providing access to consumer protections in the practice of psychology. Again, this is a chart with a brief history of the expenditures for the board. It begins at the 2011-13 biennium and then continues to the 2015-17 governor's budget. This board is also entirely an other-funded agency. The slight increase from the 2011 to the 2013-15 biennium, excuse me, the 2011-13 through the 2013-15 biennium, is mostly due to inflation. And then from the current biennium, the governor's budget increases expenditures by about $160,000, which is in part due to inflation, but also includes changing a half-time office specialist position to a full-time position to accurately reflect the amount of work already being done by that incumbent. So this chart displays the revenues for the board over time. The board receives 100% other funds from revenues primarily generated from those biannual licensing and renewal fees charged to psychologists and psychologist associates. In 2009, the legislature approved increasing fee rates for license renewals, contributing to the increase in revenues between the 2007-09 biennium to the 2009-11 biennium. At this fee level, the board has found that it's collecting more revenues than necessary to perform its duties, creating a surplus and ending cash balance. As a result, during the interim, the Department of Administrative Services approved a temporary 66% fee reduction for license renewals for both psychologists and psychologist associates. This temporary reduction, as Randy has already mentioned, began on January 1st, 2015 and will continue for one renewal cycle through December 31st, 2016. This fee reduction is projected to reduce current biennium revenues by $200,000 and by $541,000 approximately for the 2015-17 biennium. So these one-time reductions are displayed in the chart in red, so you can see how much the board would have collected had we not implemented these fee reductions. So with these one-time fee reductions, the board will retain roughly $232,000 in ending cash balance for the 2015-17 biennium, and this represents about 4 months of operating expenses. During the 2015-17 biennium, the board plans to review, as Miranda's mentioned, their current fee structures and identify any changes that they need to ensure that their revenues are more in sync with their expenditures.
Before she moves on, Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Huffman.
Thank you. Claire, do you recall back in 09 what the what the fee was previous to getting approval to increase it to $750? I vaguely remember the conversation around this, and there was a, you know, the legislature was questioning $750, if I remember right, that it sounded like it was, wow.
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, Representative Hussman, I don't have that information in front of me, but I would be happy to get that for you.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Also.
Yes,
Chair.
Representative Smith Warner.
I just can't stand not asking, where does that tiny little 3% of other come from if it's not from fees in the budget? If you go back a page in your presentation.
Oh, the other co-chairs, Representative Smith Warner. The others can be also those fines or civil penalties that the board might include or impose on its licensees.
Thank you.
Senator Roblin.
So, thank you, Madam Chair. My concern is the new stated rate, the $255, will that be the rate that we compare when we go into the next biennium? And so an increase will be on the 255 as opposed to the other, because then it might show a very large increase without an acknowledge that we had this decrease. And people get uptight when voting on fees, especially large increases. And if it's going to increase 100%, and that would still not be up to its original one, is this fee decrease listed as a other than just a decrease in the cost?
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, Senator Roblin. My understanding is that this fee decrease is an administrative process. So in the administrative rules that the board files with the Secretary of State, it's noted that this is a temporary decrease. So future decisions, I believe, would reference the $750.
Okay. I'm happy with that.
Madam Co-Chair.
Yes, Senator Monroe.
So in another way to say that, the statutory limit on the fee is still $750, but we're not collecting that much. We're reducing that dramatically for the rest of the next biennium. And in the meantime, the board will determine what that fee ought to be, something less than $750, but we don't know what.
Co-Chair Comp, Senator Monroe, Co-Chair Monroe, I would say that's correct, with one slight caveat, is that the board's license fees are determined by rule, so the statute for fees for the Board of Psychologist Examiners gives the board the authority to set it by rule, so it's not a statutory limitation that the board's fees are $750.
But spinning off of Senator Roblin's question, I think it's very important when we meet in 2 years, or whoever meets in 2 years, that going from 255 to say 500 not be seen as an increase that we have to vote on.
Right. Co-Chair Comp, Co-Chair Monroe, I believe that's essentially correct. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Legislators don't like to vote on big increases. Reductions, that's okay.
Well, we can put a press release about the reductions we're having for the next
yes.
biennium. Last page.
Sure. So I'll just give a Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, I'll give a short summary of the governor's budget for the Board of Psychologists and Examiners. So it supports current services and adds a 0.5 FTE to an existing office specialist position to accommodate the growth in license applications and licensees. So in addition to adjusting staffing levels to accommodate the board's increased workload, the governor's budget also supports continued collaboration with the Board of Psychologist Examiners, the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists. And it anticipates that the two boards will continue to share the executive director and the operations and policy analyst positions, and will develop a plan for merging their resources by the 2017-19 biennium. And that concludes my presentation. I welcome any more questions you might have.
Thank you. Senator Roblin.
So the increase in the half FTE would be a permanent increase. So the total number of people would increase by half, even though we actually decreased by one, by our half, by the sharing of the two facilities. This will show an increase of half, a full-time FTE.
You lost me.
Well, we split the two responsibilities with the director and that policy analyst, and we allowed this group to take the policy analyst and the other group to, so that, but they share that position. So that didn't change any FTE, it just rearranged how they accounted for it. This one actually increases half an FTE as a permanent employee in the budget. So as we looked at the whole, both of those groups, we would be adding an one half FTE as a permanent position. And a decision to make later on the other two positions. They go away at the end of the biennium, and we have to make a decision about how we're going to do that in the future.
Co-chairs, Senator Roblin, I believe that's correct. The Board of Counselors and Therapists will add those two half-time positions that, as you mentioned, will fall off the budget at the end of the biennium. And then for the Board of Psychologists Examiners, it is just the half-time FTE increase.
That's what happens when you have a previous speaker on the committee.
I'm sorry.
No, details are important.
They are. At least I have to have it in my mind, so yeah. Thank you.
Senator Monroe.
Just double-checking. I think you said that even with the 255 for the next biennia, that at the end of that biennia, you would have about 4 months reserve?
Mm-hmm. Co-chair Comp, Co-chair Monroe, that is correct.
Yeah, that's... in the ballpark that we like to maintain, 3 to 4 months seems to work out pretty well. Thank you.
Representative Smith-Warner.
Thank you. So just to review the shared functionality of these two boards. So we are talking about continuing to have a shared ED between the two of them. Yet my read of this is we have a 1.0 FTE in each line. Am I reading that incorrectly?
Co-chairs, Representative Smith-Warner, so my understanding is that each board has budgeted an executive director position at full FTE. And so the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists, that board actually fills the position as an executive director, while the Psychologist Examiners Board fills it as an operations and policy analyst. So it doesn't change the FTE. Each board has, those positions still represent two FTE for the boards.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Randy, please.
Co-chairs and Representative Smith-Warner, that's absolutely correct. The interagency agreement creates this process that then takes those two full-time individuals and splits their duties between the two boards. So, and this interagency agreement defines that relationship and what workload is going to be and how much time each person spends with each board.
Thank you.
Any other questions for this panel? Great job. Thank you.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
You.
I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 5013 and Senate Bill 5033. And we are very fortunate because tomorrow Randy gets to come back. And we are going to be a presentation on social workers. Okay. Kim, anything else for the good of the order? Mm-hmm. Senator Monroe?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you all. We are adjourned. Great. Thank you all. We are adjourned.